Do you look and sound like a credible leader? And if you do, you're immediately going to outsmart a lot of conflict. If you don't, you're going to position yourself to have more conflict. And what I feel fairly obligated to say that others might not ever hear, except from someone like me, is if you can't run the meeting, no one thinks you can do anything else. So the flip side, the positive side of that is if you run a great meeting, your credibility shoots through the roof, you're positioned for a great year, you're already accomplishing that parent buy-in. And so paying attention and being really strategic about that meeting is your perfect stage for getting the year off to a strong, solid start. You fall back on your habits. So what are your habits and are they credible?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the High School Coaches Club. I'm your host, Max Price. It is another great day to learn together, and I think it's so awesome that you've decided to join me for this. If it's your first time, I hope you stay for a while, and if you're regular, my gosh, I cannot thank you enough for sticking with me for so long. And a huge thank you to Will Miner and the gang at Netting Pros for sponsoring the High School Coaches Club. As you know, they've been with me for quite a long time as well. If you need any facility improvements, make them your first call. They'll be your only call. Not only will they help you design it, but they'll do it all custom for you. From the fabrication, the installation, they've got you covered for netting, digital graphic wall padding, turf protectors, cubbies, windscreen, ball carts. Seriously, anything you need that involves a net or anything like a net or even a mound, whatever it is, they can do it for you. They crush the baseball and softball world on a daily basis, but they also get after it in football, soccer, lacrosse, track and field, golf courses, and just about any sport you can imagine. Real or pretend, it doesn't matter. They'll do it for you. Just give them a call. They're truly making facilities better all across America, providing high quality products and services for facilities, fields, courses, and stadiums throughout the country. Not only at the high school level, but for recreational, collegiate, and professional sports as well. You can contact them today by calling 844-620-2707, emailing info@nettingpros.com, visiting their website of the same name, nettingpros.com, or by checking them out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Netting Pros, they're improving programs one facility at a time. In this episode, I am joined by Amanda Box, the better half of Chuck Box, who was our guest on the last episode. Since 1993, Amanda has been training and coaching individuals and teams in every area of communication, from conflict to interviews to customer service, presentation skills, team building, leadership, and more. She is one of my absolute favorite people to follow on Twitter, where she constantly shares incredible communication ideas to make you a better person and a coach. So let's do it. Let's dive in. It's episode 91 with Amanda Box. All right, Amanda Box officially here. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
I think I sent you an email saying this, but I'm really excited to have you on. I think the more I kind of dove in preparing for our conversation, just going through like your Twitter feed, I just blown away. And I was telling my wife this morning, like, wow, like I'm genuinely excited for this. And I kind of got into the idea of how your husband Chuck is coached for a long time and everything, and he'll have been on the podcast by the time this podcast comes up. And I was telling her how it's kind of funny because a lot of the ideas that I get credit for as a head coach are actually ideas that my wife came up with. And then as I'm reading through your stuff, I'm going, oh my gosh, like a lot of this sounds like Chuck. And so I'm wondering how much of his stuff is really actually just your stuff repackaged from him.
No, he certainly stands on his own as a professional. But I do think what's especially relevant for this audience is I am a communication coach, taught full-time on the university level in the communication department for 10 years, worked in public relations, other things. But I've been married to him. You know, we've been married 33 years. He's coached college. That's where we first started. Then community college, then high school, and now he's an assistant at Texas A&M. And so I feel like I've had all of those jobs too. So it is kind of sometimes difficult for me to say whose idea was that. I think he has the great ideas. I just help him execute those with some communication coaching is how I would really probably broadly categorize that.
Yeah, I mean, as we get into, you know, it's pretty clear, and I think most coaches who have an understanding of coaching get this, that coaching really is almost all communication. I think a lot of younger coaches, we get into it thinking like, especially like whatever sport is, so, you know, baseball is what I know really well, and it's like, I'm going to get into this, and I'm going to help guys get really good at baseball, and then you start coaching, and you realize like, actually teaching them baseball skills is such a small percentage of what you're actually doing. It's pretty much all relationships and communication and helping them, like, become people, essentially. And so I think what you do just works so naturally in with what it is to be a coach.
Yes, that's true. And what coaches, I think, struggle to, or maybe they understand it more clearly, but that's true for everyone. Like I coach everyone, because it's all going to center around this communication piece. It makes or breaks everything else. That's why I call myself the communication evangelist, because I'm always trying to persuade people that, hey, start here, you know, start with your people, start getting to know them. Then the technical part, like you said, will be a lot easier.
I wanted to, because this is the High School Coaches Club, I wanted to give you a chance to go back. What was your own high school experience like? Where did you go? What did you kind of get into extracurricular-wise? What was that experience like for you?
You just surprised me with that question. I grew up in Western Kentucky in a little town called Hardin. It was so small, we generally just said we grew up in Marshall County, because the little town, you know, really it's unlikely that people know where that is. But because it was so rural, we had one high school, and it was an amazing high school because all the resources went to that one. So if you're in Kentucky or you know anything about Kentucky, I say the reason the state exists is because of basketball. So even our three-year-olds can dribble. So I grew up with that sport. I barely knew about baseball, which is kind of funny now, considering I've been in the baseball world for so long. And I was in the band. I was a field commander. And we had 200 kids in our band, and we marched to Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I had a silver cape. So that's my high school story right there.
The band world is crazy. So I've talked with other coaches about this too. And I used to, where my classroom was, it used to be kind of like over top of like a parking lot, and the band would always be out there. And I remember going there during the summer, like getting some stuff prepared in my classroom, and the band would be out there on the asphalt. Yeah. And we joked off air about, you know, being hot in Oregon, but for us, 100 degrees, that's hot. And so they're out there on the asphalt, like practicing 8 hours a day. And the amount of time and energy they put into band is un-freaking real.
Well, we were really proud of our accomplishments, and it was really fun. And I loved my silver cape and being a field commander.
How did you take that path then? Because you shared a little bit of what you got into, but how did you take that path from wearing the silver cape to now being the communication evangelist?
Well, I'm off the charts extroverted. So communication was a natural choice for me. And I really started in the broadcasting. Like, my undergrad is broadcasting. I have a political science minor that I forget about most of the time. And then I also have a master's in communication, and it was just my lane. I started day one as a freshman. My professors were amazing. I had my own little interview TV show in college because I could. And I just never looked back. I never wanted to do anything else. So I'm still here loving it. I get more and more passionate about it every day because of what it means for people. If someone can present themselves in a polished, professional, credible way, that's because of their communication skill, which means they're going to get that job and they're going to be able to do what they want to do with their own career goals. And the interpersonal part of it, which is where my heart is with helping so many coaches, is this conflict piece, because we don't get training in conflict. I've had a lot of training and a lot of years helping people with conflict. So I love that about my job, is that I get to make your life easier and better.
Let's get into that first part you talked about. So, you know, the idea of of getting a coaching job from the start, right? Because I think obviously anyone who wants to be a coach, they're, you know, looking for jobs, you're trying to get interviews. Depending on where you are, it might be really easy to get in the door, otherwise it might not. Let's say, you know, let's say there's a coach who is aspiring to, you know, work at a certain school or whatever. They get through the process of the early screening. They get an interview. They're going to go sit down in a week or so. What types of things would you talk through someone who's kind of preparing for potential job interview, especially in the coaching world? What would be the things you'd really expect them to be able to do or say or act or what would they need to be able to do in order to walk into that room feeling confident about what they're about to embark on?
What they need to be able to do is present themselves truthfully in a way that reveals what they want the interviewers to know. I always assume that the people in the room are not going to be great interviewers. They might not really know what specific questions they need to ask. They may just have a list they're going from. There may be a lot of people in the room, et cetera. So when I'm working with a client, I want them to be really strategic about everything that's happening. So if you call me, Max, and you have this interview coming up, I'll say, okay, send me your resume. Send me a list of questions that you don't want to answer or are really uncomfortable answering, then send me a list of things you want these people to know about you. And let's match that up with another list of experiences that would reveal. So it's this strategy of going in here with several puzzle pieces, and you have those in your mind, and I'm going to practice with you how to tell your story, how to answer your questions. And in the first 5 minutes, I'll be able to tell a lot about your communication style. So I've had all kinds of people that couldn't finish a sentence, people that have tons of ands and ums, people that will answer everything yes or no and not say anything else. I had to say to a client the other day, hey, you can't sound bored with your own life. Let's pep it up a little bit.
So right.
We kind of start off with these, you know, three or four lists of things. Then we just start chipping away. Because what people, I think, overlook, or maybe just really never understand, is that communication is a learned physical skill, just like baseball. And in some ways, there's not a lot of difference in how you coach, Max, and I coach. Hold your feet here, do this, sound like this. These are all things you have to do with your body. But people don't normally consider that a physical skill. They just think, oh, you either have it or you don't. Well, that's ridiculous. Even the best speakers or the best writers, the best playwrights, they have editors, because, you know, that first thing that comes out on paper or out of your mouth, that's a prototype. And that's never going to be your best work.
It's interesting because when I first started doing this podcast, it was about 3 years ago, and all I knew is I wanted to do podcasts or interview high school coaches. And so the first few, I had a list of questions of like, here's exactly what I'm going to ask. And then as I've gone through time, not only have the questions changed tremendously, but the authenticity of it has changed tremendously, where a lot of the time I don't even really use questions. I just kind of have a conversation with people. And then it's funny that you mentioned that a lot of interviewers maybe don't even know what to ask, because it brought back a memory for me of I was just out of graduate school. And so I was applying for a bunch of teaching jobs. And it was back when there was kind of a teaching shortage, or the opposite of a shortage, sorry, where there's like no jobs open. And I went down and interviewed for this English job.
Uh-huh.
To be an English teacher at the high school level. And I remember before you went in the interview, I was sitting in the lobby and a woman came out. She handed me a piece of paper, and it was a list of all the questions that this panel was going to ask me. And almost all the questions were about content. Like, for example, like, what's your favorite like genre of English literature? What time period? What are some authors you really like? And I remember reading through the list of questions going like, and as like, I'm literally sitting there about to go to the interview, I'm like, I don't think this school is where I want to work, because all the questions, none of the questions were about like, what are you going to do for kids? Like, how are you going to help kids? How are you going to handle different situations? It was all just like, what do you know about English, literally, like the content. And I just remember walking out of that thinking, man, like, I don't, it's funny that you say that now, because it finally triggered it for me of like, a lot of times you're right, interviews interviewers don't really know like what they want to know from you. They haven't kind of figured that out.
No, they haven't. And just like we don't really get trained on how to interview much. I mean, you might have a workshop or you might hire someone like me, but it's not something we do a lot. Well, it's the same case for people who are interviewing candidates. No one tells them how to interview either. Mm-mm. So often you're talking about the wrong things. So that's why I like for my clients to go in really prepared, because what I know is, yes, of course you have to be competent. And Max, I'm sure you do know your favorite genre of literature, which sure. I'm curious about that, actually. But as far as working with people and players, others, whatever your profession is, you have to be likable. And I'm not saying everybody has to be best friends. That's really not the case at all. But you do have to be someone that others want to work with. And answering those kinds of informational questions, you're exactly right, that tells you nothing. So I train my clients to answer that question in a way that reveals characteristics about you. And you talk about that experientially, so it doesn't feel like I'm saying I'm awesome, hire me, because people love me, but I'm sharing this story that reveals these saying characteristics about me, and it's really easy to share. In fact, this is a great example of that, Max. I was telling the story to a class I was working with this week, and I had a client who was a Southerner, and the reason that's important is because we had to really work on enunciation. All of my Southern clients, I have to say, put endings on your words, because we kind of sing, you know, we'll slur one word right into the other. So it's more melodic, but that can be really troubling. One, because my accent has less credibility than most other accents. So I have to make sure that someone like me, who's a Southerner, puts endings on their words. So I was working with this client who was a graduate and had an engineering degree, but he was struggling with nailing down a job. He couldn't get a job. So that's the first thing we had to do, was put endings on those words. And I kept listening. And he was a really nice looking, what I would consider a frat boy. He was very likable, but I was getting really worried because I couldn't get him to where he needed to go. And I kept listening. And I was like, not only is he not putting endings on his words, he's not putting beginnings on his words. And boom, once that clicked into place and he could share a few experiences, he actually sounded 50% smarter and nailed that job and got it immediately. And, you know, that was my Super Bowl, you know, that was my trophy from getting this individual who had a lot going for him, but others couldn't see that, to fixing a couple of things that were, quite frankly, mechanics as it comes to how someone's talking, to being perceived as smart, likable, boom, we want to work with you. Here's a contract.
That's what coaching is. And it's cool to listen to, because that's the moment of, like, I don't know, seeing a kid, you know, figure something out and, you know, have a really good game or whatever it might be. It just, something clicks for them and it's like, wow, that's really awesome. So it's cool to hear the coaching side from a different genre of coaching, I guess. And one of the things that you also mentioned that I thought was really interesting is the idea of like trying to make yourself sound, like you said, present truthfully, but you want to sound excited about things. And you mentioned earlier of like, I've had some podcast guests before where it took a little while to finally like pull it out of them of like, dude, let's go, like get excited about this. Like trying to ask a question that gets them to like get excited about who they are and what they have to offer.
Yeah. But here's what's happening, Max, right there. Maybe I need to coach them before they come on your show, because when people want to give the right answer, it's going to sound stiff. Yeah. But if I'm just talking to you, then I'm just talking to you. And so the conversation is going to be very natural. So that's the reason why interviews are so hard. It's because it needs to sound natural and conversational, but it's not. I mean, this person is on a stage. There's a lot at stake. And so I'm nervous if I'm being interviewed versus if I'm just in conversation with you. So that's why it's a learned physical skill. That's why coaching is necessary. And so I'm coaching people, okay, stop worrying about giving this exact right answer and connect with the person in the room. That's when we're going to see who you are. And that's what is needed. That's what we're trying to be. But it's not an impromptu thing. So that's why we're going over those lists of experiences. We're reviewing how to tell this story. We're thinking about where this answer might fit with a variety of questions. So it does take strategy too. Interviewing is really tough, I think. I think it's one of the tougher things that anyone has to do.
It reminds me almost of, like, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, like, okay, if I was going to go interview today for something, and I had, like, different stories about myself that I want to somehow work into this interview, I might have a list and, like, jot some things down to try to, and then I was like, it almost sounds like a politician, where, you know how, like, they get asked a question, and they'll kind of answer it for a second, and then they veer off and answer this other thing that no one asked them, and it's like, you have to be careful, right, of not just totally veering sideways and not answering the question, but also you still want to like share who you are. And when you go over these things beforehand, you want to find a way to work them in.
Yes. And that's why I always say, tell the truth in a way that reveals what you want them to know, because they may not ask a question that allows that. They may talk. I've been in interviews where they talked the whole time. They don't know anything about me. That's the worst thing that can happen. Or I had a client one time who knew somebody at the company, and there was this rating system, and so they got scored. And so they were very badly coached to just get the person doing the interview off topic. And I'm like, why did you do that? Now you don't have any score. Like, why is that good advice? It's terrible advice. And then there are just people who, like, if they're not prepared, they'll just say anything. Like, one of my friends told me about a candidate who, when asked about hobbies, she said, I like to take naps. Can you live? I mean, somebody said in a job interview, they like to take naps. And this is only, I think, trumped by a story that I was teaching a class, and they told me about this candidate one time who got to the interview, realized he had no socks, got a Sharpie, and colored in his ankles.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, my Lord, please tell me that person is not working for the federal government right now, because we need some reasonable judgment here. So people just get nervous and they do all kinds of things. So it's also a way, and it's also just a great point of practice is necessary. And that always seems to be kind of a shocker to people, but not to coaches. I mean, they understand the value of practice. I mean, you've practiced your sport with your players for years, hours and hours every day. When I say that about communication, you need to practice that. They're like, huh? Well, you don't just think about baseball. You practice baseball. So you don't just think about this physical skill of communication. You practice this skill of communication because, of course, you don't rise to the occasion. You fall back on your habits. So what are your habits, and are they credible? Is your grammar sound? Have you eliminated the ands and ums, which is totally doable? What does your expression say? I have so many male candidates, clients, and I have to say, hey, I need you to move your face. And you know, we crack up at that, but it's because of this, I'm trying to say the right thing here instead of just connecting with the person in the room. It comes across so stern. There's no such thing as neutral. I call it a news anchor face. I teach people about that. So they'll have this pleasant, but what they think is neutral is not. It's negative. So the news anchor phase is a way to have a default that is not negative, it's positive.
And then what about the flip side of it? So, you know, we talked a lot about the interviewee and what they have to go through. Then as an interviewer, you know, if you're an athletic director hiring a head coach, or head coach hiring assistants, or even like a principal hiring an athletic director, like the whole hiring process, obviously then a huge part of a good interview is going to be based on the interviewer, right? And you mentioned earlier, a lot of times interviewers don't even know what it is that they're trying to ask. So if you were sitting in front of a group of people who are preparing to interview other people, what are some of the like key questions, ideas, confidence pieces, like the whole thing, but for the interviewer?
Yes. Such a great thing to consider, because I think we click into, oh, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What's your philosophy on pitching, et cetera, going into this mechanics. But really, you've already said said it in a couple of different times today. That's really not what's going to make or break this program. So what I want, in addition to whatever else they need to know with all of that, what I want them to ask is about their experiences. How did you manage conflict? You know, tell me about apparent conflict and take me through that experience for you, and just let them tell their story. And if you're any kind of decent listener, you're going to be picking up on a lot of really important things. Do they know how to handle conflict? Because I doubt it. No one knows. I mean, we need to have another 18 podcasts, you know, just talking about how to handle conflict. So I'm just going to let that rest for just a second. But that's where high school coaches are really struggling, because that's such a part of their job now, and no one has taught them to do it, and they don't have a great model probably at home or at work for how to really navigate that very well. So that's why a lot of athletic directors are pulling people like me in to build them up. So as a AD, I really want to know, how do you handle that? And what have your experiences been? Because if a coach can handle that, that means they're pretty healthy. They're self-aware enough to know some pretty significant things about themselves and what's working, what's not. And so I want to know about that. I also want to know how they fit in with, or how they can fit in, or how they try to fit in, how they navigate, you know, working with other coaches, because newsflash, there can be a lot of big egos on a coaching staff. Baseball, usually the coaches are smaller, so that can be a little bit easier sometimes, or not, I don't know, depending. But I did have a client tell me that this was an athletic director. He went looking for one of his coaches the other day, didn't see him in his office, and his office was, the desk wasn't in it. So he started looking around. He found that the coach moved his whole office, like in some storage room somewhere, because he did not get along with the other coaches. That's how bad and toxic it was in that situation. So as an AD, I want to know, okay, what is your personality? Meaning, you know, is there a little test you can take? The DISC is a really great one, which kind of indicates your communication style. And there are many others. But what has been your experience with other coaching staffs, and how has that gone for you? And And honestly, you know what? If they start slamming their previous coworkers and bosses, you know, that's a red flag for me. If there are issues and he's talking about that, or she's talking about that respectfully, then, you know, that tells you a lot too. So I also want to know what the family dynamic is, because whatever happens to you, Max, happens to your family too. Whatever happened to Coach, I mean, to Chuck, happened to me too. I mean, I remember one year where he had we struggled that year. We owned two houses. He had 12 different meetings. You know, his head of school had 12 different meetings about that. He was really, we just knew we were going to have to move. And it's not that, you know, getting fired is that unusual for coaches. It's not even necessarily always an embarrassment, because it just happened so much, but we didn't need it to happen that year when I was pregnant with our third child unexpectedly, and he was hanging on to his job by a thread, and we were pretty thin emotionally with all of that going on. But I share all of that to say that it's important for athletic directors to know about the family dynamic, because coaching is not a normal job. And so what happens to you as a coach happens to the rest of the family as well. And so, you know, I would want to bring them in for a Friday night dinner just to see them together and to see if the family is supportive of that. Because if the family's not, then it's going to be more difficulty on top of a really demanding job. Coaching is not a normal thing. And if you're not in a coaching family, you don't understand that. But if you are in a coaching family, you absolutely understand that. And we want our family members to be coaches because they're so amazing at it. And we want them there. But it's not something without sacrifice for the family. So I'm just saying, like, that's something you need to know before you bring in someone. So, that's a short list. But I want to know how somebody handles conflict. I want to know what the family dynamic is. I want to know how they fit fit in with their other coaches? And I also want to know, what do they do to grow themselves? How are they growing their leadership? And that's one thing I've always just admired so much about Chuck, is that even as sophomores in college, when I'm studying for my exams, he's reading Coach's Digest and he's reading about Coach Wooden and all the great leaders. And he's just studying. I mean, I love that about coaches too, is they are just consumers of information. And if they're not, you know, if they're not, I really worry about their ability to be a good coach, because every good coach I know is crazy just about devouring information that's going to help them with leadership, that's going to help them with motivation, that's going to help them be stronger individuals themselves. Which, I mean, you're evidence of that, Max. I mean, you don't have to do a podcast, but you're curious and you want to learn from different professionals. So, you know, you're an example of that.
Well, that's how it originally started, is I just wanted to talk to a bunch of coaches, and what a great example, or a great excuse to just have them on a podcast. Say, let's talk for an hour and I'll try to learn as much as I can from you. And then maybe through that, other people learn stuff. But honestly, it was really a selfish thing for myself. The idea of talking about family life, I think, is really important. I have an example of that recently, maybe about a year or so ago, maybe 2 years. We were interviewing some people to be our new JV head coach. And one of them, who we really wanted, I was sitting down talking with him, and he was saying, well, my wife's due. They're going to have their first baby. And it would have been his first kind of head coaching job at the JV level, but it's still a huge time commitment. And the baby was kind of going to be born like a month before the season started. And during that interview, we talked him out of it. Of like, you don't know how much your life is about to change. And then to add this on top of it, in the middle of all that, you don't know how, you have no idea what we don't know right now. Maybe it's good to like press pause on this for right now.
Oh my goodness. That brings back so many memories. I'm remembering, you know, going into labor with my second child, sending word to Chuck, and I'm like, it'll be a while. He's finishing practice, and I'll then he moseys on over to the hospital. You know? I mean, yeah, it's just part of it. But you know, when very gifted people, very motivated people like Chuck, like my husband, like so many other amazing coaches I know, we need them so desperately in our communities that I never wanted Chuck anywhere else. So even on our worst day, I still wanted him to be a coach, because that's where he's born to be. And that's why I'm so eager and to use my communication coaching skills to help coaches, because no one teaches them how to handle conflict. No one teaches them how to go into an interview with strategy. And you know, when Chuck was coaching college, he didn't need those things. He had all the mechanics, and he was just a bulldog of getting the ugly off the program and building that culture. But I would say normal people don't have that. And we have so many more high school coaches than we have college coaches. And when he went to college, that's where he really started leaning into, well, what am I supposed to say to this, Amanda? And I'm like, well, what do you want to say? And I could just tell really clearly that he didn't know what he didn't know about how to handle this parent situation, how to handle this conflict, how to handle this, these interpersonal dynamics. And that's when he really started leaning into my skill set, which kind of launched my even appearance today on your podcast, that through him, because of my years and years and years of being in the coaching world and my years and years and years of helping people with communication skills, and just the lack of that in the coaching world, that it's I'm kind of a unicorn in that sense to know so much about both worlds. So I do absolutely everything I can to equip and support coaches.
All right. Well, when you become a coach, nobody really gives you like a course to take. You know, one of the things that comes to mind is that something that you've actually tweeted quite a bit about lately, and it's the parent meeting. I remember when I first took over, gosh, I was probably like 25 or 26 as a head coach. It was time for the preseason parent meeting, and you know, I had really no idea what I was doing. I certainly wasn't a parent, let alone a parent of a high school kid. So I didn't really know what like, what does a parent want out of that meeting? And then from the coaching side of it, I'd seen other coaches give parent meetings, but I didn't really have an understanding of what I should probably do. And just kind of been winging it ever since and hoping that each parent meeting gets a little bit better with it. But you've shared a ton about it. And so it's kind of a good opportunity to kind of share some strategies that maybe coaches could adopt to kind of have a successful kind of preseason or in-season parent meeting.
Sure. Well, the win the parent meeting campaign, I guess, is part of a larger idea that there are so many things we can do to outsmart that conflict parent meeting that no coach wants. No coach wants the email, can we meet? And certainly after my experience of, you know, being alongside Chuck for so many years and being uniquely positioned as a communication coach and just knowing so much about both worlds, I was just thinking there, you know, let's get that strategic part that every coach excels in. Let's get that strategic part of their brain and let's outsmart that, because there's so much you can do not to land in that situation. And the whole idea with the parent meeting is this is one thing of many things you can do just to increase your credibility, because that's what leadership comes down to. Do you look and sound like a credible leader? And if you do, you're immediately going to outsmart a lot of conflict. If you don't, you're going to position yourself to have more conflict. And what I feel fairly obligated to say that others might not ever hear, except from someone like me, is if you can't run the meeting, no one thinks you can do anything else. So the flip side, the positive side of that is if you run a great meeting, your credibility shoots through the roof, you're positioned for a great year, you're already accomplishing that parent buy-in. And so paying attention and being really strategic about that meeting is your perfect stage for getting the year off to a strong, solid start and just outsmarting a lot of things that could go wrong that you're not talking about necessarily.
Well, yeah, you mentioned in one of the tweets about making yourself, you didn't explicitly say this, but it was the underwriting of it, of like sharing, you know, pictures of yourself, sharing pictures of your dog, like having your family showcased in some way. And just like, of course, the underwriting to that is this idea of that I'm a human being as a coach. I'm a person. Coaching is something I do, but it also involves these other people, these, you know, and my dog, right? Like it's, there's a lot of pieces to this. It's not just who I am to your son. I'm a lot more than that. And so I think that idea of sharing about yourself is such a cool thing that I think, oddly enough, those first few parent meetings I had, I didn't really share anything about myself because in this warped mind that I must have had at the time, I thought that that was unprofessional. That idea of I shouldn't be personal. I should be talking about what I'm going to do for your kid, how great things are going to be in our program, and very like, here's how we are. Then, of course, as time goes on, you realize, no, like people need to know who you are as a person.
Well, because that's your strength. And certainly there's such a wide range of things that would be inappropriate to share,
yes,
but there's
yeah.
so many things you can share. What if, okay, you're my client for this hour that we're together, Max. And so I'm helping you outsmart any potential conflict that could pop up, because it's gonna, you know, conflict yes. is going to pop up. So we can't be thrown by that. But again, we can do an awful lot to outsmart that. So you have your lists of things to accomplish at their parent meeting. And for you, as your coach, I want them to see who you are as a person, because a coach can be just a title. And then when things get crossways, they don't see you as a person at all. They just see you as somebody in their way to getting right. what they want. And so, you know, just within all the appropriate boundaries, share what you want them to know about you. It's in a way very similar to how I would approach an interview for a client. How can you tell the truth and reveal what you want them to know about you? And for coaches, it's such a unique inspiration of why you're coaching. Unless you're at the very, very top level, you're not making a lot of money. And if you're at the very, very top level, you're not doing it for the money. It's much more than that. Someone inspired you. You love the sport because of what it taught you. You have a special relationship maybe with someone through that sport, friendships, coaching relationships, et cetera. I could go on for days about that. But so pick a couple of things that you feel safe in sharing that could connect them to you and that they can understand your love of the sport and your love of the players, because that's what holds coaches there, not the other stuff. And so that connection and credibility and connection can outsmart an awful lot of conflict. I need to tweet that out. that's what you're going for, because you have all your list, your mission, your vision, your values, your calendar, your how you order equipment, all that kind of stuff. But what is, you know, what is on that list that you can send in an email and use that time far more wisely to increase your credibility, because that's what's going to outsmart the conflict. And there are a whole list of things. So sharing a little bit about who you are in proportion, which would take what? A story, a picture, you know, 2 minutes tops, and you move on. It's not something that takes a lot of time.
One of the things you just mentioned is one of the tweets that you had put out there recently. And when I read it, I immediately turned to my wife and I'm like, oh my gosh, why have I not been doing this forever? And it's something I'm going to immediately implement this year. And it's the idea of sending information out before the meeting. And I think it's funny because as a teacher, and as probably as a professional in lots of regards, one of the most annoying things is going to a meeting, an in-person meeting, and that, you know, the saying of like, this could have been an email, right? And so the idea of sending information out beforehand, all the stuff that people can read through on their own, they don't need me to read it to them. And then I can save that time during the meeting to get to really important stuff that maybe isn't appropriate in an email or maybe can be better said in person. And then taking it a step further, you have this idea to quiz people.
Well, there are online platforms that are free for educators called Kahoot. Or if you don't want to do that, then there are many ways you can do that. Throw some cupcakes in there. And then you're feeding people. You're having a little fun, because no matter what it is, if people can win it, they want to. Or throw a couple of gift cards in there. And then all of a sudden you have some connection. You have some fun. You're feeding people. And you've just got this great start to your year. So if you can run a great meeting, people really think you are a far more credible leader because you are. People hate meetings because we don't do a good job with them. Well, then why are we doing the things we hate? That doesn't make sense for a strategic thinker.
No, and one of the things that also popped out, and it's actually funny that Chuck and I talked about this. I talked about it years ago with Butch Chaffin, of what they've done in their parent meetings, where they have like parents write on one side of an index card, like, what are your baseball goals for your kid or whatever for our team, you know, win a state title, have my kid, you know, hit 30 doubles, whatever it is. And then flip the card over on the backside, write, okay, let's say they accomplished none of that stuff. What are things you want your kid to get out of this? And then you had a tweet again, Twitter, great place. You had a tweet where you kind of said that same thing, but having the coach do it. So in a parent meeting, sharing what as a coach you want for the players, not just what you want from the players, because I think so much of that feels transactional. If you're just saying what you want from them of like, follow these rules, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. What I'm going to do as a coach for you as a player, and you know, kind of talking to parents, telling them, this is what I'm going to do for your son. This is what our coaching staff is going to do for your son. And I think that's so valuable.
Well, because the reaction is completely different. When I know you want something for me, then I'm going to listen to you because I know what you want for me. If I think you just want something from you, then my defenses are going to go up. And actually, I will tell you this. I was the officiant at my daughter's wedding in January. And this is such an important concept for me that when I was doing the ceremony, I pulled out this particular idea. You know, this is a beautiful day and it's such a celebration, but we all know the challenges are coming. And when those times come, I want you to hear what you want for each other. And I had asked them these questions and they gave these answers. And because it's just that, our ability to listen, our willingness to listen, our willingness to set defenses aside when I need correction or any of those things, it completely depends on do I think you want something for me or do I just think you want something from me?
I think that's incredible. And I think it's something that people really, I'm not sure what the right word, they like thirst for. Like it's this idea of being being accepted for who they are and the value that they bring to it, not necessarily the potential that they might bring to the team, but more so like what you're going to get out of it. And I think it changed when I had a kid. My son's only four, so I got a long time to go till this becomes, you know, if he decides to play high school sports or whatever. But I think of that lens of like when I do these parent meetings, I still at this point have never been the parent of a high school kid. And so I can only kind of guess at what it is that they want from me and what I can do for them. And so that idea of really focusing on what you can do for the kid, I think really helps clarify that for parents. And I would assume brings them some peace of mind, like you were saying. And then the payback for that later is, like you've mentioned before, is that when we then get into in-season conflicts, especially revolving around, you know, like playing time or something like that, there's this hope that the preface and the idea of me having talked and kind of shared with you that I want stuff for your kid, that it's more than just playing time from the coach's end. And then of course it gets into this deeper discussion of like, how do I make it clear how you get playing time in our program? But
that's another thing to cover. A couple of things I want to point out. It's always about the playing time, right? It's going to always be about the playing time. But every last coach I know, amazing group of people. I mean, just incredible group of people. What they want for their players is completely clear in your mind. You know the list, and it's character, and it's toughness, and it's kindness, and it's persistence. And yes, of course, it's athletic performance, but that's not all it is. So every coach I know has this amazing list for what they want for their players and for their families. But are they talking about it? Probably not. So this is just an encouragement to share what you're already working incredibly hard to accomplish, but do the parents know that?
Right. Well, then you get into communication with players, and that's something that I feel like that was kind of my like personal goal over the last couple of years as a coach was, I think early in my coaching career, especially as a head coach, there was this like fear almost that I had of, Let's say I was going to, you know, for lack of a better words, I was going to bench you and put someone else in playing, you know, first base over you. Uh-huh. And early in my career, I would kind of avoid that conversation and just go with this assumption that, well, you know, like you've been playing really bad. Of course, I'm going to have this other person get the chance. And so you'll just know, like, it's no problem, right? Like, you'll obviously, you know, I don't need to tell you, this is going to be embarrassing for you to have this conversation. And so, of course, then, you know, recently, over the last few years, it's been one of my big goals is to constantly communicate with kids, obviously about how they are, like normal life stuff. I think all of us as coaches do that. But then the harder conversations that tend to then alleviate a lot of problems later on. And they're tough conversations. They're hard conversations. So early in my coaching career, I avoided them. And it obviously led to issues. And so lately, I feel like our program has been in a lot healthier spot because I'm not really afraid to have those conversations anymore because I know that the payoff down the road is huge.
Yeah, you've actually encapsulated, I think, what happens to a lot of people. We're very reluctant to be uncomfortable in a conversation, but that actually mm-hmm. creates the very thing that you don't want to happen. So to outsmart that conflict, you started talking to your players early. And what I would encourage you to do, all coaches to do in their parent meeting is, okay, let's talk about how you earn playing time and use that language. Here's how you earn playing time. Here's what I'm looking for. And you would decide what numbers you would choose or not. But then I have some coaches who will set, okay, you know, what are your personal goals, player? We're going to sit down and talk about that. Here's how you get there. And then they're going to have another meeting maybe at the end of their fall practice if it's baseball. And then they're going to set another one in the spring. Okay, where are we? You know, and then I have other coaches who would invite parents into those meetings. So you're really pulling back the curtain and being completely transparent about how playing time is earned. Here's where you are, player. Here's where you want to be. Here's what you need to do to get there, because those things are knowable. Of course, there are some intangibles. The reason sports are fun is because there are a lot of surprises, but coaches know that's the definition of a coach, getting somebody where they want to be quickly. So they know what needs to be done. And then I have another coach who's a client who, what he does is he posts the status almost every day. You know, you're keeping charts, you're keeping numbers. Okay, here are the numbers. Here's where you stack up. with your teammates, and here is how our team stacks up nationally to a school in our class. So you not only see where you see where you are in comparison to the team, then you see where you are in comparison to a nationally recognized team. So there are no surprises. I may have even said on this podcast, the silent treatment is a terrible communication plan. So you're just filling in the blanks there. So you're telling the parents what they really want to know. And I would also encourage them to maybe, I don't want to invite in issues, but hey, if you have a problem with me, or if you have an issue of any kind, I would honestly coach against saying the word problem. If you have a concern, if you have an issue, here's the protocol for that. And lay it out. How do you and your administrators want to handle that? And you know, you can choose to handle that at your parent meeting or not. I would be open to debate. It's really not my role to make decisions for a coach. It's my role to, I think, put things on their radar so they can make a more informed decision.
Well, I think it also is kind of a good segue into this that I had jotted down a while ago because it stuck out to me. Two parts of it. One that you wrote that just talking to like people, essentially players, you wrote, "You're already awesome and my job is to help others see that."
Yeah.
I think it plays really well into something else you've said recently, which is that one of the big goals that we should have with players is to help them gain confidence so that they feel like other players will listen to them. And I think those two things work really well together. And I think so much of coaching is, like we've talked about before, it's teaching humans how to be humans. And
yes.
A huge part of that is that idea. It's embracing that you're already awesome. And then it's helping a player gain the confidence that allows them to feel like other players will listen to the things that they say. And then over time, hopefully even will give them the confidence to feel like coaches will hear and listen to them when they have something to say that they think might impact the team in a positive way.
Yes. And that's a really tough spot for a player to be in. Peer-to-peer accountability sometimes sounds like I need to correct your behavior.
Yes.
And so there are a lot of things in that category to unpack. But just like I'm telling or coaching the coaches to, okay, make these communication habits just habits. What are your public speaking skills like? What is your grammar like? What is your nonverbal communication? How do you handle time? What does your batting cage look like? What does your desk look like? Like all of these things go into your credibility rate. And for a student, it's the same thing. Whatever communication skills you want, make those a habit in your everyday conversation, because when you get into an awkward or uncomfortable position, it's not going to be easier to communicate anything. It's going to be harder. And those habits of credibility and connection are really incredibly important. You said being human, everything starts with that. Again, connection and credibility outsmart the conflict. So for players, what they tell me is their coaches want them to hold each other accountable, but they don't know how, or they would already be doing that. And they're not using that exact language with me. But if you think about it, where do they see that modeled? The people are horrible at handling conflict. And research shows that when someone's in conflict, they'll revert to the emotional age of 12. And I can tell you, Max, when I'm dealing with them, I hope they're 12. Because most of the time, it's about like your four-year-old son. They don't know what to do. They're doing all kinds of the wrong things because they don't know what else to do. So what the athletes are doing is kind of nothing. You know, it's the fight or flight thing, because they don't see it modeled. Their coaches are encouraging them to do it, but they're not really teaching them how to do it. So that's one of the ways I've been really able to help the athletes and the coaches is, okay, let's really break this down. You want accountability, but how does this happen in the way that you want it to? And shocker, you know, it starts in the off season with, are you talking to each other?
Yep.
Because they don't want to be labeled as teacher's pet. They don't want to act like they're perfect. They know they're not. They don't know what to say, but they do want to be a good teammate and they want to do what the coach says. So there are so many things you can do in the off season just to create that connection that will alleviate the need to speak up in an awkward situation. Because I've talked to so many athletes about this. Okay, what does an athlete say in this moment of accountability? And they all get the same look on their face, Max. You know, they don't know. Okay, well, that tells me in that moment, that's really not the time. You know, if it has such a low probability of working, then nobody's going to do it because it's too awkward and of all of the fallout with the relational fallout. So teams that are accountable to each other, they, in the game itself, they don't really have to say anything because they don't want to let each other down. So all this stuff has happened in the preseason, the connection, the doing things together. And I have a few tips and tricks for that, but that's really tough on players, and coaches don't know how to teach it because they can't do it either.
If you were coaching a team right now and you're getting ready to start off season workouts, like a lot of us are, and you know, you're going to have, I don't know, let's say 50 kids anywhere, you know, freshmen all the way up through seniors. What would you be mixing them a lot? Would you be trying to keep them with the, you know, like keeping the freshmen with the freshmen? Because my mind goes to this. So I think of like, okay, accountability and relationships and stuff like that. It's really hard if I'm on, let's say I'm on a varsity team and I'm a freshman and there's seniors on that team. And, you know, if there's an opportunity for me to speak up, I'm probably not going to do it because that's scary.
Yeah.
If I'm a senior, there's that weird balance of like, there's a freshman here and I have some choices. I can treat him really poorly or I can treat him really well. There's like, you know, there's a lot at stake, and then there's outside relationships and everything that goes into, you know, what a high school baseball team or whatever team it might be. So if you're looking at off-season workouts right now and you have a program, are you mixing those guys a lot or are you keeping them separate? Like what's your strategy for pairing them, grouping them? What would you do?
Well, if something's not broken, I'm not going to fix it. So if that, you know, as a coach, if I'm looking at my team and this is happening the way I want it to, great, knock yourself out. But what I know about people is that peer to peer, if we can separate them by grade, it puts them in a smaller group, which is, which is always more effective on every level. People are going to talk more. Because would you really encourage a freshman to go up to a senior? I wouldn't. I mean, right. That's a very low chance of working. Can a senior do it to a freshman? I think you can in the off season when the senior is the advocate. And so they can say things like, hey, coach is really picky about the locker room. You know, you can say that. So that brings into play this idea of a pocket phrase. So backing up just a little bit, I think it's a lot easier on everyone if it's grade to grade. The groups are smaller and they're equals, they're peers. And I just think that works all the way better on all the levels. And we could talk about that some more if you want to, but it's just easier for them. And then for coaches, you should give them things to say because they don't have the words. It's remarkable to me how often my clients come to me and they say, well, I just didn't know what to say. Everybody says that. I just didn't know what to say. Yeah. So people don't say anything. But if I can give pocket phrases, and those are just words that you keep in your pocket for those moments when you don't have words. Because when you don't know what to say, that's a big red flag that a deeper conversation really needs to take place. So if I can tell a player, hey, here's a pocket phrase. Coach is really picky about the locker room. Hey, coach is always watching for positive and negative body language. Don't let coach see you doing that. So a senior player could do that easier as the role of an advocate. But freshman to freshman, you can do that. You know, don't let coach see you doing that. And there's an advocacy there. There's a camaraderie there. Instead of what players hear when they hear the word accountability, they often hear it as, I have to correct behavior. And that's an awkward place to be. But if I can be your advocate, then that's better. And also, too, you can say, okay, my school is Texas A&M right now. Well, at Texas A&M, we keep the locker room clean because we're always recruiting. We never know when a family is going to come by, and we never know when a donor is going to come by. So this is why, you know, you're telling them this is what we do and this is why, and that's going to make sense. It's not correcting behavior. It's explaining what we want to happen. And then you just have things like, and there are lots of pocket phrases, you know, that you can use. And what I really encourage players and coaches to do, because every team has their language. You have a theme for the year. You have your nonverbal communication that you might not have to say anything. You know, you might pat your chest and that means something for your team. And you know the thing. So use the language and the nonverbal communication that's already in your team culture to make it easier for you. And for coaches too, I think you need to help kids know what to say and when to say it with things like the pocket phrases. I think those are very helpful. The feedback that I've gotten is those are very helpful. And if you can even do check-ins, you know, if you notice, I'm a sophomore, I see another sophomore, they don't look right. They're not acting right. Hey, what's up? What's going on? And even if they don't want to talk about it, then no big deal. But if you do, I'm here. You're just checking in with them, because what you don't want is a lot of ignoring of that behavior, because coaches, players, you can predict who's going to be an issue. I think you can very easily predict who needs that accountability. Well, do it now instead of, you know, bottom of the seventh when the game's tied up. That's not going to work. Outsmart that situation.
Well, it brings up for me, like in our program, one of the things that we really try to train kids a lot, and it happens a lot more with the younger kids because the older guys already kind of get it. And it's been fun to watch older guys start to teach the younger guys this.
Yeah.
But one of the things we work really hard on is not publicly, you know, like we're playing a game, we're not going to say anything publicly where anyone else can hear us to a player or a teammate about something that they did wrong. So an example, this past year, we have a young catcher and guy in the field makes a mistake. And instead of waiting till we get in the dugout to kind of have a conversation in the middle of the field, he kind of yells something out. And so we wait till he comes in the dugout, you know, put our arm around him and kind of explain to him, one, you know, the shortstop knows he made a mistake. He doesn't really need you to, he doesn't need you to tell him, like, if he knows he did, he knows what he did. Like, it was, we're good. And then two, like, what better way to kind of hurt relationships and ruin our team's, you know, progress and camaraderie and trust than to call someone out in the middle of the field? And so I think of like pocket phrases, and I think of, or even not pocket phrases, but like you said, nonverbal things that we do in our program. It brought up a lot of thoughts of like, oh yeah, there are a lot of things that we do that I've never really put a name to it or thought through it, but it's, I think it's really important for building trust between kids, is kind of protecting them from each other. I don't know. That's a weird thing to say, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right. Every kid knows when they didn't perform the way they wanted to. So what we want them to do is get to the next play. Right. So if they come off the field and they, from you, Max, get a blank expression, well, there's no such thing as a blank expression. And you're standing right there in the dugout. They have to walk right past you if they struck out or whatever. So how can a coach communicate that they need to get to the next pitch or they need to get to the next play? It's not condoning what happened. They know you as a coach aren't happy with that performance. They're not happy with it. So how do you communicate to them within the language of your team? Hey, you know, take a breath, get to the next play. You're okay. Shake it off. Because baseball in particular, other sports too, have their own team dynamics, but baseball is built upon failure. And every sport is to some degree. So what I'm saying is, the bottom line, they know, how can you communicate, you know, shake it off. I still believe in you. And of course that was not what we wanted to happen, but you know, I don't hate you, because if you have a blank expression, that's what they think you're thinking. Mm-hmm. So we've got to do that intentionally.
Yeah. I think of a lot of the situations like that, especially, just watching people on TV even and seeing like if someone makes a mistake, one of the first things they'll end up doing is looking toward the sideline.
Yes.
And seeing what's that reaction like in there. And, or if, you know, if it's in baseball and you're hitting, you're going to look at the third base coach after, you know, you swing a miss or whatever it might be. It's like that moment is, that is such a huge, important moment, not only for the relationship, but for, like you just said, like what's about to happen right now. Because if I look over and there's a really negative reaction, or even like you said, a blank react, like nothing, I know where my brain goes, right? So I've destroyed confidence for whatever I'm about to do now. So if it's the next pitch, you know, in baseball, or whatever, and then trust wise, if it's a really negative reaction, now I'm looking in there and I feel like, oh, he doesn't have my back. Like he's really disappointed in me. And that's not good for performance or relationships.
It's not true.
Right.
Like, sure, that's not what you wanted to happen in that moment, but you still believe in that kid. So communicate that in a way that's appropriate. Like, do I know exactly what that looks like for your team? No, but I think you do. And here's what happens too, is that really hurts a coach's credibility too, because Max, you're doing everything you can to get that kid to the next play, to build persistence, to build toughness, to shake off whatever. But in that moment, it looks a little bit hypocritical. It looks a lot hypocritical. Mm-hmm. They're not getting that very same message from you. And that's why that neutral doesn't work. It's got to be appropriate. You don't celebrate a failure of sorts.
No.
You are communicating, hey, shake it off, take a breath, let's move on. Because that's what you, isn't that what you want? You know, I am such on this huge soapbox right now of ask for what you need, because people get really irritated when they don't get it. But if I'm not thirsty, I'm not going to ask you for a drink of water, or not going to offer you one. I mean, so are you asking for what you need in that moment? That neutrality doesn't do it. What you need is for that kid to get to the next play. Take a breath, get to the next play, and communicate, I still believe in you. What would it look like to have a conversation in the off season about, hey, coach, can we really talk about how accountability works? Who do I want to hold me accountable? And really teach us how to do that. Is it player to player? You know, maybe one of your upperclassmen really volunteers, you know, if my effort or attitude, and that's really where the accountability piece comes in, that effort or attitude, it's rarely about making or not making a play. If my effort or attitude isn't what it should be, you can say to me, boom. And so your players are kind of teaching each other what to say there. And then I just love the idea about letting kids be who they are. You know, at A&M 1 year, our first year here, they had the whole Pringles thing. Well, that started with players. Last year they had the whammy wagon. Again, that started with players. So you've got players that are funny. You've got great connectors. You have the energizers. You have the warriors. You have the Yodas on the team with the words of wisdom. So encourage them to be who they are. It's another way of unleashing the awesome in the off season and in the game itself, because that's what's going to keep people loose. That's what's going to hold people accountable to me far better than actually knowing what to say when you feel like you need to correct someone's behavior. You know, you're trying to outsmart all of that kind of thing. It just has a very, very low probability of actually working. I will say this. The one place where I'm not worried about diplomacy or connection is the complainers, because probably the complainers are the ones that aren't producing well, and that complaining can really be cancerous. So I teach players to check it hard, don't feel bad about it, because it's contagious and it needs to be stopped immediately. Again, in the off season, and they would do that with their language. You know, I would say something like, hey, not helping. And they have their version of that. You know, they're not going to talk like I am. And that's why I'm really encouraging players and coaches to use the language and the body language that's already in their culture.
Well, I love that. And it does. It is so true. One of the best pieces of advice I think I ever got was early in my coaching career. And it was a coach told me to just be me, right? And you can't fake being somebody else because everybody will pick up on it, and you can't keep it up long enough anyway. And I think the natural progression from that is what you just got into, which is that players have to be allowed to be themselves because they are who they are. And then, like you said a while back, you know, you are already awesome, and my job is to help others see that. So how can I put you into positions? How can I put you into places where that whoever you are, like you said, if you're the big energy person, how can we harness that and use that for good and help you learn when is the great time to get into it? And I think all of that is so important because I think a lot of times we feel like we have to fit everybody into this box of like, this is how we are. And it's like, well, every player is different. And then the hard part as a coach, well, there's a lot of hard parts, but one of the hard parts as a coach is that every year is different too. So my group of people I have this year, you know, we might have 8 or 9 of them back next year, but it's still a different group. And even those 8 or 9 guys coming back, they're going to be different people too. Like the people change, groups change. We can't coach everything the same way and do everything the same way because it's not how groups work.
Exactly right. So coaches will say to me, hey, I just hear crickets. You know, if we're talking about accountability and they're frustrated with how their players are with each other, then they'll say, you know, they're the silent treatment, because when things are going well, they're high-fiving, they're dogpiling, there's a lot of conversation, there's a lot of positive body language. And when things aren't going well, everybody gets still like a deer in the headlights. So you want to encourage whatever their natural strength is to not only do that in the game, but I expect you to do that in a game. I need you to do that in a game, because that's what's going to keep the accountability going. Even though we might not kind of think of it that way, that really is how it works. So we need those energizers. We need the warriors. We need whatever they are. We need it in the game instead of everybody behaving differently.
Amanda, thank you for doing this. And for those listening, this was an impressive feat to get this thing recorded, because we, 100% on my end, kept having connectivity issues. This spanned 2 days, multiple different recordings within each day. But you have been so forgiving and so willing to just stay in there and hang in there and get it done. And so I appreciate you so much. And then on top of that, obviously, everything you're sharing is just awesome stuff, and I so appreciate it. Before I let you go, I want to give you a chance. If there's anything you feel like maybe we missed, we didn't hit on, anything you just want to say, or whatever it is, just kind of free open mic to you one more time.
Well, I think the way these 2 days have gone for us is a pretty good indicator of how communication is. It is glitchy. It's uncomfortable, and we still have to do it. It's not undoable. It just might not go to plan. So I don't want people worried about perfection. That's really not required, and it's not very credible anyway. If you say the perfect thing in your mind, that doesn't mean it's really going to work. It really is. It's all about that credibility and connection. You know, I read this book. It was about this military leader going into battle, and she didn't know when the battle should take place. So she went to this special place and got a vision from the oracle, and she found out the day that the battle ought to take place. So she led her troops into victory. And I almost stopped reading the book because I thought, this author they couldn't lead a kindergarten class out to recess. This is not what leadership is. Leadership is uncomfortable, and speaking up when you are uncomfortable is a part of leadership. And it's decidedly uncomfortable. It's just, you can get comfortable being uncomfortable. And the more you can do to outsmart that, the more comfortable you're going to be. And the great thing I think about being human is that I can be a better communicator 1 second from now than I was a second ago. It's a lot easier than hitting a baseball coming at you 95 miles an hour. I'll tell you that. So it's all knowable. It's all doable. It's just about adopting a strategy that will work for you and your team.
Well, again, I appreciate you so much. There'll be a bunch of links down in the show notes for people to click on and get more from you. You've quickly become my favorite follow on Twitter because everything you share is just so awesome and helpful, and honestly, like, immediately useful, which is a lot of things I see on there, like, you know, here's a really cool thing that I could implement in 7 months. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But so much of your stuff is just immediately like, here's a way to get better right now today. And that's the kind of stuff that we're all kind of looking for. So appreciate you so much. Thanks again for hanging in there through all the trials and tribulations. And just can't thank you enough.
Yeah, well, what you said makes me smile big because I want to give coaches things that they can use right now. So, mission accomplished on that one. Thank you so much for having me.
So, ironically, while recording this very conversation, which, as you know by now, was centered around communication, we lost our connection to each other 7 different times. Amanda was so incredibly kind and patient through the entire process, which meant we recorded this conversation in 7 different pieces spread across 2 different days. She didn't owe you. She didn't owe me. She owed us nothing. But she hung in there with me. And as you know by now, she provided incredible ideas to make us all better coaches. So just as a whole High School Coaches Club community, a huge thank you to Amanda for sticking with us and making us all better. If you aren't signed up for the weekly newsletter, or if you haven't picked up some High School Coaches Club stickers, you should definitely do so. Head on over to highschoolcoachesclub.com to get started. Don't forget to leave a rating or a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. And no matter where you're listening, hit the subscribe button. Most importantly, though, if you found any value at all from this episode or any previous episode, please share it on social media via email or through the old-fashioned word of mouth. It does not matter how you do it. Just find a way to bring a few more listeners in who might benefit. That's how we all get better, and that's how we grow the club. Huge fist bump, seriously, huge fist bump to Amanda Box for jumping on the call with me 7 different times. And thanks again to Netting Pros for sponsoring the episode, and of course to you for clicking that play button. If you have any recommendations for people who should be guests on the show, please reach out to me, even if that recommendation is you. Follow the club on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at HS Coaches Club. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Max Price, and can reach me via email, max@highschoolcoachesclub.com. All right, that's it. That's all I got. You're awesome. You matter. Thanks for all you do. And as Coach Lee would say, loving you.